Welcome to Middle Grade Mavens, where two author mums discuss their favourite middle grade books, provide recommendations, and share insider industry tips for authors trying their hand at middle grade. Julianne Grasso is the author of the Frankie DuPont mystery series, cupcake enthusiast and part-time children's literacy wrangler. Pamela Ukerman is a writer, web designer, and creative dance teacher who sometimes finds time for sleep. Both Julie and Pamela devour middle grade books, not only for research, but to share with their combined brood of four munchkins. Welcome back to Middle Grade Mavens. Hi, Pamela.
Hello, Julie. Hello, everyone.
Our 22nd episode.
I hope it hasn't been too long a break since the last one.
Yes, with our whole fortnight off. Ooh, that was fun.
You're trying to remember to turn everything off and there's always something that pings or doorbells that ring. Or anyway, onwards we go.
So what have we been up to? Will you fill everyone in, Miss Pamela?
Oh, yes. Julie and I don't get to see each other very often, but we have a little bit lately, haven't we? Because
we
were at the launch of Nat Amor's book, Secrets of a Schoolyard Millionaire, which was held at the fabulous little book room in Melbourne in North Carlton, which is such a great and popular venue for book launches.
Yes.
Lisa Lambert, who runs the shop with her parents, she is just such a fabulous host and so great with the kids. And they also run workshops and book clubs and other events as well. So, yeah, a big shout out to the Little Book Room for supporting the kidlit industry so brilliantly. And,
yes.
And Nat's book was launched by none other than fellow podcaster and all-round funny guy Adrian Beck, who, along with Sally Rippon, hosts the Kidlit Club. So if you haven't discovered that one yet, search for it on Facebook, the Kidlit Club. So, yeah, we had a great time yesterday and chatting with a few people, and what a fabulous launch that was. It was so much fun.
Yes, Nat's a superstar, so it was so great to be able to stay on the journey with her.
Yeah, and hopefully it won't be too long and we'll be seeing another book from Nat.
Yes, I hear it's in the wings. So let's dive in. Pamela, what is the title of today's book?
Yeah, so today I will be reviewing two books, and the first of which is Hubert Horatio, How to Raise Your Grown-Ups by Lauren Child, published by HarperCollins last year in 2018.
Fantastic. And another double review, which I'm sure nobody's complaining about. I'm certainly not. I love them. So so tell us, would you read the jacket blurb for us?
Your thing. These stories are about the days when the Bobton Trents had it cushy, very cushy indeed. The Bobton Trent seniors certainly know how to make the most of their extravagant wealth, socializing, doing things, buying things, and generally being more than a bit irresponsible. Luckily for them, their son Hubert Horatio is an exceptionally intelligent, talented, and sensible child. Unluckily for Hubert, this tends to mean that a lot of his spare time is spent steering his rather unruly set of grown-ups out of trouble.
Oh, that sounds hilarious. Obviously, what would you class this genre as?
Yeah, it's humour, well and truly humour.
Oh, I think Lauren Child, she does write other things other than humour, but she certainly excels in humour.
Yeah, and she does weave it into pretty much everything, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the estimated word count on this one?
It's quite heavily illustrated actually, and pretty light in text. It's under 20,000 words. It was a little hard to estimate, as you know, sometimes they are. And it's probably closer to 15, so it's fairly short.
So what drew you to this book?
Well, I think most people in the industry, in the kid world, would have heard of Lauren Child, creator of the Charlie and Lola series and its franchise, Clarice Bean, Ruby Redfoot, and, she's got some other picture books out there. She is also the outgoing Children's Laureate in the UK and the recipient of many, many awards. I still remember buying our first Charlie and Lola book in a Waterstones store in the centre of Amsterdam, where we lived when my eldest son was a baby. And, yeah, we've loved them ever since. And I practically binge-read the Clarice Bean books after discovering them in an op shop a couple of years ago. Having grown up in England, the English humour that Lauren uses is, it's really my thing. So there's that aspect too. So really the short answer to that question is Lauren Child drew me to this book.
Yes, yes, understandable. So tell us about it.
Yeah, the book is about Hubert Horatio Bartle Bobton Trent, how's that for a name, child genius, and his irresponsible but very wealthy parents and eclectic extended family. It starts out giving a detailed description of Hubert Horatio's life so far, and it's almost a collection of mini stories about the family rather than one long story. But then the plot starts to come together. Some relatives come to visit, they suspect a ghost in the mansion, and some tinned food mysteriously goes missing. The story does take a while to get going. We got about halfway through this and my 8-year-old asked, is there an actual plot to this? And yeah, I sort of had to agree that it didn't seem to be going anywhere, but it did get there in the end. And it's all told in a rather pompous but hilarious narrative voice and accompanied by Lauren's signature style illustrations. The main character of Hubert Horatio is actually drawn from a character Lauren had written in an earlier picture book. And I think she had requests from a lot of people saying, you know, we need to see more of Hubert Horatio. And I've also seen it mentioned that she had planned two more Hubert Horatio books, but I'm yet to see any details about them.
It's always interesting to see where a series will go, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, even when you're massive.
Yeah, and I think she took her time with this one. Sort of more of a passion project. We'll see what happens.
And overall enjoyment.
Yeah, look, I don't think I've painted a very good picture so far, but actually I really quite like this book. Its ridiculousness appealed to me, and my 6-year-old loved the character of Hubert because they both share a love of words and numbers. I began reading it to both boys together, and they were in stitches in some areas, but then hanging out sometimes without relief for the punchline in others. They did sort of drift in and out a little bit, but it's short and wacky, and it carries you along to the end. Although I do have to admit that I ended up finishing it by myself because the boys it kind of lost them. And you know, for that reason, that's something that's interesting about this book. And from the perspective of being an author, and if you're an author listening to this, it's quite a niche book. Lauren really let her creativity loose with this one, which is, you know, something that we need to do as authors and illustrators if we want to create something that's new, something different. But as a result, she's created something that doesn't seem to fit comfortably into any one section of the market. It's fun and quirky and short, so it seems like it's for younger readers, but the language is fairly complex, and I had to explain many of the concepts to both of my boys who are, you know, quite good with their language. And, you know, like I said, it sort of lumbers along pretty slowly in terms of story. And just seems to be a collection of funny anecdotes about the character's life until about halfway. So it's actually very hard to compare this book to others, you know, and this is something that we do need to think about because it's something that publishers need to think about. This is where your book sits in the market and who it's going to be marketed to. And if you're Lauren Child, UK children's laureate and best-selling author, and having your name on a book means it will sell, then, you know, you can basically do what you like. But if you're just starting out, you need to have a good idea of what's out there in the market, and it's all well and good to write something a bit different. But if it's too niche and it's not likely to sell very much, then a publisher is not going to pick it up no matter how well it's written. But, yeah, on the flip side of that, of course, sometimes, you know, today's niche is tomorrow's market saturation. So, you know, keep those niche manuscripts handy and ready to sell, but preferably with a strong narrative arc.
I think I'm going to use my favorite word. It's such a juxtapose, isn't it? Because you want to stand out in the market, but if you stand out so far in the market that they can't put you anywhere in the market, then you're not going to actually sell. So
exactly. And you know, I as somebody who grew up in England and who loves kids' books, I really quite enjoy this book, but you know, I would have thought that my two boys would have been the ideal audience for this book, and you know, just
I've read a similar book. I think I could probably say it's similar by Philip Ardar, and it's the Eddie Dickens series, and they're very much set like in an English setting, and or maybe it might even be Scottish, but heavily illustrated and like quite funny to an adult reader. But I did try and read them with Giselle, and she just totally lost interest. And I'm not that I'm downing. I think Philip Arter is actually quite a genius in what he writes, but I just feel like it might have been pitched to the wrong age. So, yeah.
And this one, it you know, had a lot of concepts that my boys just haven't come across before, a lot of difficult words, and, you know, and it was very funny, and they love humour, but it was, it just didn't strike that chord with them.
So who do you think will love this book? What age would you recommend it for?
Oh, you know, 40-something year old? No. it's listed as age 6+, but yeah, I think the language and some of the content is just too complex for that age. There were so many things I had to explain to my 6-year-old, who's quite, you know, advanced in his language. Although quite handily, the book it did have some little dictionary definitions throughout the book of some of the harder words, but words like caviar and crudités and ambidextrous and stock exchange and renaissance and experimental abstraction and haiku and patisserie, you know.
Oh my gosh.
And now it's just, you know, that's not all of them as well. So, yeah, you see my
point. Wow.
Yeah. So, 6 is a bit young, but, you know, I think it's actually great for more established middle grade readers who want something a bit quirky and funny. And, you know, I was quite a fan of the ridiculous when I was a kid. I must have read Roald Dahl's The Twits dozens of times. So, yeah, I think kids who are sort of like that sort of book, yeah, I think they would have liked, they would like this as well.
I reckon it's a classic case of, you know, misrepresentation of the age that it's actually for.
Yeah. And it's hard to judge that.
Yeah.
I mean, and look at the cover, it does look like it would be something for 6 and up, but
yeah. Okay. So do you think reluctant readers would not cope at all? Are we saying more confident readers for this one?
Yeah, definitely more confident readers. Too many big words and complex sentences. But, yeah, the wackiness and the illustrations and the low word count might appeal to the older reluctant readers out there.
Yeah. That's number one. Yeah. Let's go for number two review.
That was a long review for a pretty short book. Yeah, but the second one is much shorter, and this is for The Spidersaurus, which is one of the first two books in the Junior Fiction series, Noah and Blue's Zooniverse, which is written by Nova Wheatman and illustrated by Chris Kennett and published by Heidi Grant Egmont this year, 2019. And I should mention that two more books will be released in this series in just a few weeks. So we are looking out for those.
And we actually met Chris at Kidlit Vic.
Didn't we? I did.
And I think I might have said, because he told me the book that he'd done with Nova, the series, and I said, oh, that's great. We sometimes like to read books and then surprise the author and illustrator with a review. So it's actually uncanny because you didn't meet him that we're actually going to do that. So hi, Chris. I hope you're listening. I'm going to tag you.
We'll have to. And I did actually tag them both recently because, you know, when my 6-year-old likes a book, he likes a book.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he's been loving these. And he actually wanted to write a review himself and drew the Spidersaurus just a few days ago, so after I'd written this review, and said, can you please send it to the author and the illustrator?
So funny.
It on Instagram and warn them that we will be doing a review. So,
well, there you go. It won't be such a surprise. Anyway, let's get into it. Would you read the jacket blurb for us?
Sure. With the help of a magical book, Noah Wriggle and his best friend Blue like to design weird and wonderful animal mashup creations and then bring them to life. But sometimes their mashimals love being alive just a little too much. I think I have the wrong blurb here. I've got here in The Outstanding Octo Key, which is the other book. Anyway, a marmoset monkey is mashed up with an inky octopus creating a swinging sucker. But when Oki escapes into the canteen, Noah and Blue find him before he inks. Can Noah and Blue find him before he inks the entire school? So that is the other book. The Spidersaurus, which, as you can guess, is a mashup of a tarantula and a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Oh, dear.
Oh, wow. Never mind. We make sex sometimes.
Well, they all sound fabulous. So really, and maybe that will just make our listeners go and actually find the blurb and read it. So what genre would you class this as?
Good question. They are junior fiction, and I think they'd just be humour, in the genre of humour, yeah.
Yep. And what's the estimated word count?
Well, it's great junior fiction length. It's around 6,000 to 7,000 words, and, of course, lots of gorgeous illustrations by Chris.
Oh, I think we would maybe adore this. We might have to get it for the resident 7-year-old in the house.
Yeah,
she would. Yep. So what drew you to this book?
Yeah, well, I was picking out some junior fiction selections for my Mr. Six, Noah, to give him some new variety. I think he's a little bit pigeoned out at the moment, waiting for the next Wheel Pigeons book. And this was one of them that I picked up, and partly because his name is Noah and the book is Noah and Blue. And I hadn't realised how recent it was, nor that it was written by Nova Wheatman, until I checked it out when we got home. And by then he'd read it in the backseat of a car and was giggling his head off.
So, oh, fantastic.
A random thing, but good one.
So tell us about it.
Yeah, so Noah, who loves inventing, has inherited a special book from his grandfather. It's a magical book that has the rather handy ability to do animal mashups. Noah must draw two of the animals and the book will make it so. Or must draw the two animals as one, I should say, and the book makes it so. In this book, he combines a T-Rex with a tarantula. Noah and his smart friend Blue take the Spinosaurus to school, but discover she has sharp teeth and doesn't like being locked in Noah's locker. They're in class when a high-pitched screeching sound is heard throughout the school and the students are evacuated because the principal thinks there's a possum on the loose. Noah and Blue know it's Spidey, as they call her, so they escape the oval to find her before the exterminator finds her.
Oh, high-level drama.
Right. Imagine the hilarity.
So, yes. So your overall enjoyment.
Yeah, this is a fun junior fiction series with a lot of potential. My Noah loved the idea of the animal combos and has been coming up with some of his own quite funny ones. The story is fast-paced and funny, but not over the top, which I liked, and the illustrations add to the humour. And throughout the story, some of the previous mashups that Noah and Blue have done, which there are no books about, but they're just mentioned, and they add to the humour and the depth of the story. So that's, yeah, quite funny.
Sounds like a winner. Hmm. And who will love this book? What age would you recommend it for?
Well, this one is also listed for 6+, and this time I agree, yes.
Brilliant. So do you think reluctant readers would enjoy this, or is this, basically for reluctant readers or confident readers as well?
Yeah, look, it's great for reluctant readers, and confident readers will probably find it funny and a bit of fun too. And, yeah, we're looking forward to the next couple of books. I think there's two coming out this month. So, yeah.
I love it when they release a couple at a time. Like, I think that it's what publishers are doing more of, or they're releasing them within a 6-month and instead of waiting a whole year. I mean, I know a writer has to write a book, but like your child is actually, sort of, they've only got a year being 7 and they've only got a year being 6. Exactly. So if you can get a couple of books out in that time, it's such a benefit. Cause I mean, what our kids are like, they'll read an entire series, like literally within a few days. So
yeah, once you've got a winning formula, you've got to get them out then, right? Because they just they are pretty short books, but if you've got someone who loves reading or even just reads quickly, it's, hard to keep them in books.
Yes.
You're on the winner, it's a great strategy for publishers because, you will basically go buy the whole series or things get them out from the library or the library will, buy the whole series. So, I think it's a great strategy and, I guess they don't take a huge amount of time to write, but they probably just take quite a bit of time to illustrate. So they would have been, sort of picked up quite a while ago with this strategy in mind of, okay, we'll start with 2 books and then 6 months later, we'll start, or even, I think it's even less than 6 months, I think it's more like 4 months, we'll bring out 2 more. So they would not have, had the time to do this in between. So they would have done these a while ago and had them
ready. Yeah, definitely. Oh, well, that was an awesome couple of reviews, Miss Pamela.
Oh, good, I'm done. So, Julie, your turn. And what book, I'm actually looking forward to this one. What are you reading today? What are you reviewing today?
Yeah, today's book is The Dragon in the Library by Louis Stowell, illustrated by David Ortou, published by Nosy Crow on the 6th of June, and available through Allen and Unwin in August in Australia. So,
I love Nosy Crow is actually quite a small publisher in the UK, but they do such they're such great books, really, you know, really well selected and really good quality. The way that they're, you know, the covers and the illustrations, just great. I love them.
Definitely, we are big fans. So,
yeah. So, can you read the jacket blurb for us, please?
Yes. Kit can't stand reading. She'd much rather be outside playing games and getting muddy than stuck inside with a book. But when she's dragged along to the library one day by her two friends, she makes an incredible discovery. And soon it's up to Kit and her friends to save the library and the world.
Interesting. Interesting. And there's dragon in it, I'll take it. So what genre would you classify this as?
Oh, head scratching. I'm going to put it in magical realism. I guess it's just kind of a sort of a fantasy. I don't know. I'm going to say magical realism. I think that, I mean, it's not really Harry Potter, but like Harry Potter has magic. So let's put that in magical realism. So that's as far as I'm going to go.
Yeah. Well, I think fantasy is, you know, generally more in a fantasy-based world.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Magic in the real world, yeah.
Yeah. Like, all right, I'm going to stand for magical realism.
And so what's the word count? How does this rate on Julie's word count scale?
Oh, 30,000, I reckon. Yeah, quite a quick read, which, you know, I love. So, yeah.
Okay. And so what drew you to this book? It sounds like a great title to begin with.
Well, 22 episodes in and I'm still judging a book by its cover. So, of course, it was the cover. Once again, I saw this on Twitter. So I guess you can actually say that Twitter does sell books. I follow, you know, a couple of hashtags for middle grade. I saw this one and went, oh, yes. Pre-ordered it, and then we were sort of offered access to Allen and Unwin's pre-release catalogue, which just happened to have it in the August releases. So it's a double win, really. You might find this one in one of our next giveaways because I think I'm going to end up with two copies. So fantastic.
You know, the cover is important. I was showing Elias, my eldest son, the other day. I can't remember what it was now, but it was he absolutely loves fantasy, and I showed him the cover of this book and he just went, nah.
Yeah, not good enough.
Can I please read the blurb for you, because I know you're going to love this one. So I read the blurb and he went, oh, okay, I'll give it a go. So, you know, yeah, covers still do it.
Yep, 100%. And, yeah, David Ortou's done a wonderful job, so.
So can you tell us more about this book?
Yeah, Kit doesn't like books at all. So when her friends Alita and Josh sort of pretty much force her to come with them to the library, she is convinced she's in for the most boring school holiday since the beginning of time. What she finds is a wizard masquerading as a librarian, and even better still, when she actually accidentally steps into the pages of a book, she learns she also has some wizard in her. Trouble is, wizards aren't meant to be children, only adults. So Faith, the wizard slash librarian, agrees to train her. Kit tries her best to follow Faith's instructions, but the lure of being a real bona fide wizard gets the better of her. She follows Faith into certain danger that just might involve a dragon that most certainly cannot be woken, otherwise we'll have the likes of the Great Fire of London on our hands. Keeping a dragon asleep isn't that hard, really. All you have to do is read books. But Hadrian Salt, a shady businessman, knows the secret of the dragon and he longs for its power, no matter the consequence. Keeping a dragon asleep is the least of Kit's worries.
Oh, wow. I think I would have loved this as a kid. I was a library monitor when I was in primary school.
So was I.
Oh my God, we're just with nerds. But yeah, this kind of thing would have just really grabbed me.
Yeah. Look, when I read the cover, I thought, oh, you know, somehow a dragon escapes in the library. No, the dragon lives in the library. So, yeah, oh, it's just fabulous premise. Yep.
I must forget this one. So obviously you loved this one. You enjoyed it.
Yeah, this was such a fun read with so many winks to so many of your favourite books and TV shows. I counted Harry Potter, Doctor Who, The Lord of the Rings, and H.G. Wells's The Time Machine, just to name a few. And I think I'm even going to hazard a guess that the author may also be a fan of Genevieve Cogman with her Invisible Library series, which is an adult series. So she may not have heard of it, but I really think she has. Mm. And I don't know, maybe I'll give Louie a tag on Twitter and a wink and see if she agrees. Anyway, I digress. With the library, wizard librarian and general wonder that Louis Stoll builds around the magical books, it gave this very much a magical school bus feel to it. And we also got a bit of a lesson in the benefits and services of a library, which gave my heart a little flutter. I was just so glad to be reading a story that heroed the library in all its glory because, I mean, here's the thing. I truly believe books are the most incredibly magical gift any child can be given. So this book ticked a few boxes on so many levels for me, especially when I think of some of the kids in Giselle's school that may have never even visited a library and, like, wouldn't even know what's on offer. Anyway, back to the story. It moves at a fairly moderate pace as well, and we find out more and more about the wizard world and how it works. And one thing is certain, the whole world is at stake if a 10-year-old and her friends can't find a way to stop Hadrian Salt.
Interesting. I love that it gives nods to other classics. That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, yep. The Harry Potter classic, which I think it kind of is now, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I definitely say it's a classic now.
That sounds like a lot of fun. So who would love this book? What age do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to say for 7 to 9. I did note on the Nosy Crow website it was 5 to 8, which I think might have just sort of been a mistype. Because that sort of puts it in junior fiction. But for the complexity of the story, I would say this is a true lower middle grade. And Alan and Unwin actually list it for 7 to 9. So I think, yeah, they've definitely got it right there.
Right. Yeah. And is it a great one for reluctant readers?
I think as a read aloud, this would totally suit reluctant readers and hopefully give them a sense of the sort of glorious worlds they could be inhabiting if they pick up a book. But for a read aloud, I think definitely confident 7 to 9-year-olds. There was a bit like your Hubert story. There were some sort of complex words and themes. But, yeah, definitely for 7 to 9.
Yeah. Well, 9, you know, 9 is sort of up that upper end of it is, you know. They get quite a lot of, you know, they can get more complex and, you know, some of them are reading much older books at that age as well. So,
yeah. It's such a spectrum. So, yeah. Yeah,
exactly. Oh, it sounds like something I need to get my hands on. Maybe I'll have to win the next.
You might. Yes. Well, I do have another copy if my Alan and Unwin copy arrives. So we might do a swapsy one day, Miss Pamela.
Well, I did get my hands on Malamander, which Julie reviewed quite a few episodes ago now. And I absolutely loved it. I'm going to.
Yeah.
For my son, so there's my backup. You know, we don't always have the same taste, Julie and I. Sometimes we do, but you know, good books. You know, but yeah, I really enjoy that. And speaking of draws and winners, we did announce last episode the winner of our 2000th listen, and
yes,
books are on their way. The book pack is on their way now to Red Lucy. So them, Red Lucy, and yeah, let Instagram know what you think about them.
Yes, definitely. We'd love to see what she thinks when she gets them.
Yeah.
Well, we might say goodbye for today. Thank you for joining us at Middle Grade Mavens.
In 2 weeks' time with some more book reviews.
Yes.
We're finally settling into fortnightly reviews and hope you've had a chance to catch up on any backlog of episodes. Next up, Pamela reviews The Time Travel Diaries by Carolyn Lawrence, and Julie reviews The Seven Keys by Alison Rushby. And we've even managed to wrangle Alison into the middle grade Maven's hot seat for a second interview, so stay tuned for that one, folks. If you'd like to know more about the Mavens, log on to middlegradepodcast.com, or to find Julie online, drop by julieanngrassobooks.com, and to find Pamela, stop by www.ueckerman.net.